You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye, the movie guy, and this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we kick some butt as we cover our top five favorite kick-ass kids in movies.
You know, this is one of those topics when doing the research, you didn't find a lot of pre-made lists. You really had to dig a little deeper. So
Breaking new ground.
We're breaking new ground, yeah. I love it when we do that.
And we are doing this in honor of Ender's Game. Obviously, Ender Wiggin is a kid in the movie who commands a huge army against alien invasion.
Or does he?
Ooh. We are going eye for an eye on Ender's Game, Matt. Plus, we have a guest joining us, David Plummer, who was executive producer of Siskel and Ebert at the Movies.
A little show you might have heard of.
Oh, boy, a little show everybody aspires to be, especially us podcasters here on Cinema Jaw.
Yeah, that's true.
He currently is a producer and contributor over at Windy City Live, which is a local TV show here, very similar to the Today Show, but Chicago-based, I guess is the best way we describe it, to the Jawheads around the country.
Took over the coveted slot that Oprah once had. So it's a very popular show.
So we're going to talk to David about that. David has his list of top five kick-ass kids in movies. Plus, we have a review of 12 Years a Slave. Also, Matt, yourself versus David, in honor of Ender's Game, we will be playing game movie trivia.
Ooh, okay. Mm.
And as a lot of people have seen, Ron Burgundy is coming back. He's already in ads everywhere. The storm of Anchorman 2 is upon us.
Yeah, I got my Burger King commemorative glasses.
We are going to have a cinema war, wondering if he is just dipping into the well, or is this a welcome sign?
Okay.
We are jam-packed, as always, Matt.
As always.
So without further ado, we bring in our guest, David Plummer, executive producer, a producer and contributor at Windy City Live. He was an executive producer of At the Movies. David Plummer, welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for being here, dude.
Yeah.
So as I was explaining, Windy City Live is basically like a Today Show, Good Morning America type vibe. It's a morning show based here in Chicago that took over when Oprah Winfrey, the big shoes of Oprah Winfrey, left town.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was. It's been, it'll be 2.5 years, I think, at this point we've been on the air so far. And so far, so good. I mean, the audience that used to love Oprah now seems to love us quite a bit. And, we're just kind of trucking along. We do our best to highlight the city as much as we can, but we also have, you know, big celebrities coming in every once in a while. And like tomorrow, we've got Octavia Spencer will be on the show, so Oscar winner there. Today was Jeffrey Rush. So we do get some pretty good guests coming through every once in a while. So.
And you record the show in front of a live audience. Where is it recorded at here in Chicago?
It's actually at the ABC 7 studios, so right across the street from the Chicago Theater there at 190 North State Street.
Okay, so, same where 190 North, the television show, used to record.
Exactly. If you walk past, you see, you know, they've got the window out there for the news, where our set is directly behind that. So you can't see our set from the street, but we're right behind it. So.
And I've actually been there. I was on ABC... morning news for Wingfest or something. I don't remember. And I saw the set. It's really cool to see it in person.
Yeah, it's, you know what, for a local television show, our executive producer who was one of the creators behind the show, they really put a lot of production value into it. I mean, she wanted to have a local show that looked national and felt national to our viewers. And I think that's something, I think we've succeeded in that. And, you know, it's a continuous fight to keep that going. But so far, so good, so...
Now, the cool thing there, too, David, is you are sort of behind the scenes and in front of the cameras, being a producer but also a contributor. So behind the scenes, you're actually booking the guests and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so we have a booking department, so they'll book a lot of stuff. There are things like if I read a story and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I got to book this person on our show, I'll book some things as well. But my main job there is producing. So, like, tomorrow I've got Octavia Spencer, so my whole day today was spent, you know, researching Octavia Spencer, finding any, like, cool little facts about her that we can talk about or surprise her with or anything like that.
Just in case you didn't know this one, she won an Oscar.
Thank you. Thank you. I had heard that.
Leave it to Rye to come in with the good research.
Exactly.
Those nuggets, those hard-to-find factoids.
That's right.
So the other cool thing then, too, is you are a contributor. Every Tuesday, you have Plummer's Picks, where you pick DVD and new streaming-type videos.
Yeah, it's kind of fun because it's really, like, I spend a lot of my time, watching a lot of movies at home anyway. And so they just sort of, because of my background with the At the Movie show, and I, you know, worked with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert and with Roger for, you know, more than a decade. They just kind of let me go out and do a little segment every week, which, you know, I don't know why they would put me on camera, but they did. And then our audience has, you know, embraced it, and they seem to enjoy it. That's kind of the thing about our show, is we're a little family. We have a lot of people on our staff that are behind the scenes that also do stuff in front of the camera. And, you know, my boss will tell you that was her plan all along, but it's really just a cost saving thing. You know, they get a producer and somebody on camera for the same price. So,
yeah, it is cool because they're all sitting around a desk. If you haven't seen the setup, Jawheads, especially, does it broadcast anywhere else outside of Chicago, like in the local Midwest area? Or?
Not yet. It's something we've talked about, and you know, that's a question for the head of our station, or, you know, our station's group, actually. That, you know, that's something we all hope. We would love for the show to get a bigger audience,
especially
outside,
maybe in the Midwest at least.
Exactly, that's what we would think. And, you know, I'm from Northern Indiana, and my parents would love for it to come to like South Bend, so they could see it every day. And you know, we'd love for that to happen. And maybe that'll play out at some point. You know,
yeah,
it's online though. I mean, you can watch some of the episodes online and stuff.
Yeah, you can watch them online. We used to stream live, and then they've started this new thing. It's called the ABC Watch Now app, where you have, you know, if you've got an iPhone,
yes,
you can watch it on. But you can't watch it on a computer now. Streaming live, you can watch the segments the next day or after the show is aired.
Digital rights are just a big mess.
It's crazy right now. It totally is, with Aereo coming out now and broadcasting all the signals as well, so it's kind of messy. But yeah, you can catch the show really anywhere in the country, but you just have to watch it like an hour after our show is aired. So
gotcha. So take us back to the Siskel and Ebert show At the Movies. You started there as an intern.
Yeah, I started as an intern. So I, you know, right out of high school, you know, I had always kind of been into, you know, television and movies, and loved movies, you know, growing up. And actually, you know, Gene and Roger were like idols of mine growing up. I used to watch them all the time and just thought, like, how cool is that? You know, like, as a job, you can't get much better than that. So the other person I loved was David Letterman. I just had always kind of idolized him. And so right out of high school, I just, like, sort of on a bet from my high school girlfriend, submitted an application to be an intern on Letterman, thinking I had no chance, and, you know, would send it, I'd never hear back. And, like, 2 weeks later, they called me back. They wanted to fly me out for an interview, and so I went out, and at 18...
They fly out interns?
Well, when I say fly out, I mean they invited me to come out on my own dime.
Gotcha.
But I did fly out. They asked me to fly out, so...
Hey, you never know. I mean, like, it's
exactly,
Letterman.
Yeah.
We need an intern. Fly one out.
That's right. So I did, you know, I went out there, and so at 18, moved to New York for 6 months, and was just the most amazing entry
awesome.
Into the entertainment business you could get. Just so much fun. And I still, you know, to this day, have good friends that started as interns with me there that I still keep in touch with. So that was, you know, kind of my entry into the television entertainment industry. And I came back to Chicago after that. I was going to school at Columbia, and they walked in my class one day. They said, hey, we're looking for interns for Siskel and Ebert, and I was the only one in my class that seemed to care. And I was like, oh, my, why isn't everybody jumping at
sure,
this?
Sure, yeah, I would have.
So I, you know, submitted my resume, had an interview, and they hired me on as an intern, and then I just never left. You know, they couldn't get rid of me at that point.
Why would you, right?
Exactly. It was honestly, like, the greatest film school you could ever be involved with. You
sure.
know, it was getting ready to, you know, every day having access to Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert and, you know, and later Richard Roper. And just kind of having them, you know, as friends and mentors. And it was just, I'm incredibly fortunate to have stumbled into what I stumbled into. So.
Now, did you actually get to sit in the theater when they would record their show? When
yeah.
they would have some of those heated arguments?
Yeah, I
did
mean,
did it get pretty intense in there?
You know what? This is the honest to God truth. Like, people, you know, have asked me that all the time. And Gene and Roger, honest to God, had the absolute definition of a love-hate relationship. You know, they would fight about everything, where we were ordering food from for lunch, every little thing they argued about. But the one thing you never wanted was to get them on the same side on something, especially against you. Because when they teamed up, you were done. Like, there was no fighting. There was no arguing. If they teamed up on an issue, whatever it was, you just stood back and went, all right, it's you guys got it, whatever you want. You know, so, but yeah, they absolutely, total love-hate relationship. for years they did not speak outside of the show. I mean, and you know, Roger talked about that, I think, after Gene had passed away, but they did not have a good relationship for many years, and it really wasn't until I believe, you know, when Gene got married, they started to sort of form this bond, and they realized that they needed each other.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, so, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So were there ever any times when they were taping the show and it was just so heated that they would maybe take a break, and it was heated even in between the break, they were yelling at each other?
Every week. Every single week. No, that's the honest to God truth. That even as Gene, you know, was sick, even when Gene was sick, there were times when he was weak and was having a rough time getting through the show, but if Roger said something that really ticked him off, you knew it, you
wow.
know, and they would absolutely continue to argue right off the show as they walked off set and right upstairs to lunch. So.
And that chemistry made the show, you know. I mean, that's why everybody has such a passion for Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel.
Absolutely. You know, their passion was incredibly real. What you saw on our show was absolutely the real guys. You know, I mean, Roger Ebert was as passionate about movies as anybody I've ever met. More so than anybody I've ever met. And that, you know, they were both the real deal. And what they captured with that show was just lightning in a bottle. Because, I mean, who would have ever guessed? Like, you got this overweight, you know, Midwest guy that's not exceptionally good looking. And you've got this other tall, skinny, bald guy, not exceptionally good looking either. And they gave them a TV show that ended up, you know, I mean, at one point they were bringing in like 9 million viewers a week, you know, on PBS. I mean, that's today's numbers. Like, that's incredible.
It's insane.
Yeah. They were the voice for movies.
Absolutely.
Though. I mean, back then, like we were talking a little bit before we rolled. I mean, there was no internet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they were the only people you could really turn to learn about what's going on in the theaters.
And not only to learn about it at that time, but it was the only place you could go to see movie clips. If you wanted to see,
right.
If you wanted to see a clip from a movie in 1986, you couldn't just go like to YouTube and
right.
watch a trailer. Like, you had to watch Siskel and Ebert.
Right.
That was the only place to do it, you know, until Entertainment Tonight and those shows came along and
yeah.
started to slowly kill television.
And I may have told this story on the Jaw before, but I remember as a kid, my dad, who wasn't particularly huge fan of movies, he would still, every time Siskel and Ebert did their top 10 list at the end of the year, pull out a big piece of paper, pencil in hand, and he would write down all 10 movies that they listed. And those were the movies he had set that he was going to see. He couldn't care less what anybody else had to say, what the Oscars said. He was going to see the 10 movies that Siskel and Ebert listed.
Once again, Rye, this explains a lot about you. We're slowly learning about Rye the movie guy.
There's nothing wrong with that, though.
But I'm going to put you on the spot here,
sure.
David. In their prime, Siskel versus Ebert, who did you agree with more when it came to their movie opinions?
Oh, boy.
That's a big spot to be on.
That is. I probably fall on the Roger side, I think, a little bit. Roger had the ability to see the good in even a bad movie sometimes. I mean, certainly he would trash a movie that he really hated. But I remember being at, like, you know, I went and saw the Fat Albert movie with Roger, and it was just he and I in the screening room over there on Lake Street. And I came out of it going, like, that really wasn't so bad, you know, like I was kind of expecting to hate it. And Roger walked up to me and asked me what I thought. And I sort of hem-hawed around my answers, like, I don't know, you know, it wasn't that bad. He's like, you liked it. You know, you liked it. And he went on and wrote a really positive review of that movie because he liked Garfield. Like, he was not afraid to say that he liked a movie that everybody else hated. And I loved that about Roger because that's the true person. There's so many movie critics now that, like, you know,
I don't even think Bill Murray liked Garfield.
I know, right? And that's the thing is, like, you know, a reputation for a movie gets started, and then almost I think a lot of film critics just go like, well, I'm not going to like that, you know. And it's I can't say that I like that movie, you know. And that's just such crap because that's not what film criticism is supposed to be about. And Roger knew that. And if there was a movie that everyone else hated, but he liked it, he was the champion of that movie and would try to convince other people that he was right.
Yeah, so. That's great. And
yep.
I was at the opening of the Chicago International Film Festival a couple weeks ago, and it was in tribute to
yeah.
Roger Ebert, which was very touching. Chaz Ebert, his wife, came out, gave a nice speech, and they played beautiful clips of Roger Ebert and Siskel arguing.
Yeah.
And, of course, right in front of the Chicago Theater, there is a Hollywood Walk of Fame-esque star of Roger Ebert right in front of the
theater. Only one.
Yep.
The only one there, yeah.
I urge everybody to check it out. I took a picture of it. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's been a bittersweet year, you know, obviously. I mean, we lost Roger. But it's also, in some ways, it's been interesting because it's brought back a lot of memories, and you sit and you think about all the time. I sit and think about the time that I did spend with him and how lucky I was to spend that time with him. And just knowing, you know, Roger, even when he got sick, I think most people would have crumbled under what he went through. You know, I mean, I know if I were in that position, I would have fallen apart, you know, and Roger seemingly became a better writer, became a better communicator on. I mean, he took Twitter. I remember talking to Roger. This is right at the advent of Twitter, and he just couldn't understand it. Like, you're going to communicate in 140 characters. Like, he just thought it was crazy. 6 months later or a year later, whenever, after he had gotten sick, and that was really his primary way of communicating,
yeah,
he just took Twitter and went with it, you know?
He was one of my favorite guys to follow on Twitter. Absolutely. He was like my first, like, quote-unquote celebrity to follow. You know, I'd follow a couple of friends and Roger Ebert right away because I was a huge fan.
For a lot of people, he was Twitter, you know? I mean, like,
totally.
That was one of the few voices that was worth listening to, tuning into on Twitter. So
absolutely. And I'll be really interested to see what they do this year. You know, when Gene Siskel passed away in 1999, you know, the Oscars don't typically even mention movie critics or anything.
No,
and when Gene passed, Whoopi Goldberg came out and gave a big thumbs up to Gene. And this year, I'm really interested to see what they're going to do for Roger. I hope they do something similar to that.
What you're referring to is they didn't actually include Gene in the, what do they call it? In memoriam.
In memoriam, yeah.
Right. So instead, Whoopi came out and gave the thumbs up, which was a very nice touch. I think they do something special for Roger for sure.
I think they have to. I think a lot of his fans will be upset if they don't, so.
Yeah, I mean, he transcended criticism. He's a part of the movies for all of us. The two are, you can't divorce the two.
No,
yeah.
I mean, he and Gene, you know, the interesting thing is like, he and Gene were bigger celebrities than many of the movie stars they were reviewing, you know?
Right.
I mean, they got so big. I mean, people forget, like, at the beginning, like, they sort of started around the same time that Saturday Night Live got started. In 1975, 76. And people forget, like, they had a weekly running gag on Saturday Night Live for an entire season where they sat in the stands and would review the sketch. So a sketch would go, then they would go to Siskel and Ebert in the audience, so, and they would review that sketch.
They did the Muppet Show kind of thing.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And that's, you know, you think about that now. Like, if somebody's on Saturday Night Live every week doing something, like, that's a big freaking deal, you know. And,
oh, yeah.
And back in the late 70s, you know, they were superstars.
And,
so.
And not to mention when they would champion a film, one in particular, a Chicago documentary, Hoop Dreams.
Yes.
They put it on the national map.
Absolutely.
And that was something special about them also, is that they could get behind a film and get so many people to see it. And that's what we're trying to do here on a small scale on CinemaJaw.
Yeah.
The mass level that they were doing it on was awesome.
Absolutely. And you know, and people, they were responsible for a lot of movie successes. I mean, you know, a movie like Shawshank Redemption was essentially, you know, came into theaters and did nothing. You know, nobody saw it. People weren't talking about it. And they saw it. They came out and just really championed that film, too.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many of those, you know, My Dinner with Andre, all sorts of stuff that they themselves took it upon themselves to basically go out and make sure people saw these movies. So
now, it should be mentioned, you did work your way up to executive producer of At the Movies.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, after Gene passed, Rich Roper,
right,
filled in and did an excellent job. It was never going to be the same.
Sure.
They worked for the same newspaper. They didn't have the same, I guess, you know, they didn't go to battle the way,
right,
Gene and Roger did. But they made a good team. I really liked them. And then, of course, after Roger's illness, we had a misstep here where they, in my opinion, a misstep I should,
sure,
mention, where they put the Bens in.
Yeah, so Ben Lyons and Ben Mankiewicz.
How did that go down? Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, it's television, so I think a lot was looked at in terms of, you know, from the higher-ups at the company, where they wanted to freshen the show up, and they wanted to make it younger and hipper in some way. And, you know, it was, the best way I can say it is this, is Ben Lyons and Ben Mankiewicz are both really talented guys, really nice guys, you know, just good people in general. What was a mistake was, I think, Ben Lyons sitting in a chair that Roger Ebert once, you know, sat, mm-hmm, in, and it was his chair. And that was tough because I think Ben Mankiewicz probably partnered with somebody else, might have been okay. He, mm-hmm, might have been able to pull it off, but Ben took so much heat. From critics here in Chicago, all around the country, and it was hard on him, and it was hard on all of us. You know, it was definitely hard on me because there's this show that I loved and grew up with, and I saw it I saw it dying. Saw it dying, you know, and that was a tough thing to see. And it was, and trust me, it was hard on Ben. I mean, that stuff that people were saying, things that people were saying about him, you know, it's hard to take that kind of thing. But it's like I tried to tell him, you know, the thing that Richard Roper had going for him when he had to replace Gene Siskel was that he had Roger Ebert sitting next to him, and he could, you know, Roger gave him the seal of approval. And I don't know that Ben would have ever gotten any seal of approval from Roger Ebert or anything. It was just a miscasting of Ben in that case. But like I said, I think Ben Mankiewicz, had he been partnered with someone else, possibly it may have worked. But Ben Lyons, great guy. He does a really good job at what he does, which is like covering the celebrity and entertainment world. It just specifically for our show, he just was not the right fit.
Right. I remember being up in arms over it myself. Yeah. I as being a fan of At the Movies, I couldn't stand the Benzes.
You were probably writing letters to
you might have been.
To David,
yeah, exactly.
You know,
that was you. That's right, exactly.
But eventually, you guys tried to save the day, and in the second season, one year removed. I think that the Benz only lasted one season.
They went one year. They went 1 year, and then we brought in Michael Phillips from the Chicago Tribune. And A.O. Scott from the New York Times, who had both filled in for Roger when he got sick.
Right.
So Michael especially had done a lot of it because he was here in Chicago, so he was easy for us to book and get him in and everything. Because we went through a whole string of people, if you guys remember. I mean, Kevin Smith did a show. Jay Leno did a show with us. I mean, we went through celebrities and... And the weirdest one was John Mellencamp did a show with us, which was so odd.
Wow.
I mean, I'm from Indiana. I love John Mellencamp. But even I was kind of like, well, wait, we're John Mellencamp's going to talk. And he smoked the entire time in the elevators, everything. Like,
really?
Oh, my God. It was hysterical.
He's
like
a chain smoker.
We were in the elevators and like he's just smoking away. Like we're all standing around him and John Mellencamp's the one smoking. So.
I guess when you're John Mellencamp, you can just kind of light up wherever you are.
I think that's pretty much how it works. But yeah, we went through a lot of different people. And of course, Michael Phillips and A.O. Scott were two of those guys. And two of our favorites, because I think they sort of matched what Siskel and Ebert were at a time. Like two guys that were really great, both really great writers, weren't necessarily like telegenic in the, you know,
traditional sense. Okay.
But they were very smart guys. They knew how to argue with each other well, and they knew how they had their own positions on every movie. And they just knew how to play that At the Movies style that we needed them to play. So... both really, really good guys, easy to work with, and they did. And you know, for a while there, we thought we're gonna save this. You know, we're gonna pull this back together and regain some of the viewers that we lost. And we did. We started to regain some of them, but at that point, it was just too late. So
and that was the end.
That was the end, and it was tough. I'll tell you, because it's for me. I mean, I certainly went through, you know, some serious like depression during that time, because it was the show. Like I said, I grew up watching the show and loved it, and the fact that it was ending on my watch was really tough on me personally,
imagine.
You know, because I had, Roger was always great with me and he was still in contact with me all the time, even during the Ben and Ben year. And I remember writing to him at one point and saying, you know, Roger, I don't know what to do at this point. Like, I feel like I'm the captain of the Titanic, you know? And he said, well, David, if it makes you feel any better, it wasn't the captain's fault that the Titanic sunk. Mm-hmm. But he still went down with the ship. You know, that was his comment to me. In Roger's classic fashion, that was sort of his... I don't know if he was trying to make me feel better or just make a joke, but either way, it was one of those things that really hit home with me. And it was like, you know what, you're right. I'm going down with this thing too, you know. So that was definitely a hard time. But you know, there was a light at the end of the tunnel, and we've all moved on. So
yeah, well, since you are the first guest of At the Movies to be on Cinema Jaw, I'd like to extend a thank you for all the joy that you brought, probably not just me and Matt are being fans of the show At the Movies, but all the Jawheads who are listening to this, I'm sure, watched Siskel and Ebert, and you did a marvelous job over there.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
It was like my
Absolutely.
Favorite television show for years running.
Mine too. Yeah. Like I said, even before I worked on it, it was like the show I watched. So, you know, it was a ton of fun to work on it and really hard to say goodbye to it, but all things must come to an end.
Now, Jawheads all around the country, David Plummer also sees a ton of films, still accredited film critic.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm a film critic. I'm part of the Chicago Film Critics Association. I'm also part of the Broadcast Film Critics Association. So.
And I'm sure you give some of your reviews out on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter, I've got two, actually. One is at Plummer's Picks, and then I've got another one where I post my own like personal stuff at David Plummer. So, yeah.
Definitely follow David. He'll give you some tips on what movies to see.
Please do. Yes.
And it's Oscar season, so you're going to get some good tips
right around now. That's good, right. Good time to follow David Plummer.
Yes. So David is going to be sitting in on this entire jaw. He has his top five kick-ass kids picked out. Matt, it brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
Redbox Instant.
Whoa. Everything Netflix is, Matt, unlimited streaming. But get this, you also get four rentals at their kiosks every month.
I know this is fantastic. I mean, my bill has doubled.
Yes, it is $8,
and I'm happy about it. You know,
it's $8 a month for unlimited streaming plus four rentals at their kiosks every month. To help out CinemaJaw, go to our website CinemaJaw. You'll see an ad for Redbox Instant. Click on it there. Sign up. You get a month free, and you help out CinemaJaw.
It's a win-win situation.
Eye for an Eye this week, Matt. Ender's Game. The international military seek out a leader who can save the human race from an alien attack. Ender Wiggin, a brilliant young mind, is recruited and trained to lead his fellow soldiers into battle that will determine the future of Earth. The film stars Asa Butterfield as young Ender, you may remember him from Hugo, and Haley Steinfeld, you may remember her from the remake of True Grit, plus Harrison Ford, Ben Kingsley, and Viola Davis. The film is based on the best-selling novel by Orson Scott Card and is directed by Gavin Hood, who directed the first Wolverine film. Matt, interested or ignore on Ender's Game?
I think I've been talking about this film for a very long time, probably since we started this show. I'm a huge fan of the novels, and I'm very interested.
David, interest or ignore on Ender's Game?
I think for me on this one, it's probably going to be an ignore. I mean, I think that's one I'll probably wait for, you know, like Netflix or something on that one. So
yeah, Matt sold me on reading the novel. So then and this is the first book recommendation I ever took from Matt Kay.
And, one of the few books I've read. So,
and I have to say the book was very interesting. I have no idea how they're going to make a good movie out of this. I'm going to say very, very slight interested. Although I enjoyed the book, Matt, I will say. I enjoyed the book.
Right?
It is. But again, not giving a ton away. A lot of it is happening in sort of a virtual reality game type training.
Yeah.
And when you're reading all this and you know what's going on in the character's mind, it makes for a fascinating read. But how they're going to portray that on the big screen, I'm already worried.
Well, we'll find out.
Well, that's why I'm saying I'm very slightly interested.
I think the trailer
looks...
I think
it's going to go sour and terrible.
Well, I hope you're wrong. The trailer looks amazing, my opinion. I thought it was fantastic. But maybe that's the fanboy in me. I don't know. I can't separate the two.
I don't like Harrison Ford being cast here. I think he's miscast from the way I had read the book. And Ben Kingsley's in it. I think he's pretty well cast as the guy right above... Harrison Ford's character.
Yeah, Maser Rackham.
Yeah, and with Ben Kingsley being in the movie, I threw this out to the Jawheads on Twitter, and I wanted to go round robin with you guys. If you have a favorite Ben Kingsley movie, we'll throw it over to David. You got one that jumps out at you?
You know, for me, I got to go with a movie from 2007 called You Kill Me.
Whoa.
I don't know if you guys have seen that movie.
I have not.
It's great. It really is a really interesting look at basically a hitman, and it's Ben Kingsley, and he's pretty funny in it. There are some funny moments in the film, and he pulls it off really well. I just that's the first thing that popped in my mind, because I think that when I saw that movie, I didn't expect to love it as much as I did. Definitely worth checking out on Netflix or however you get your streaming media.
Sure. Now for me,
Redbox Instant.
Now for me, it's easy to go Gandhi. You know, you could drop Gandhi and nobody can say a word to you. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually going to highlight House of Sand and Fog, which I just loved. I saw it in the theater and I haven't seen it since. And I have it like marked down as a movie I've always wanted to return to, because it's one of those films where one thing goes wrong and it just gets worse and worse. And I remember thinking, God, this Ben Kingsley can act like,
oh yeah,
unbelievably. You know, I mean, just so awesome in House of Sand and Fog. That's what jumped out at me.
Yeah,
Matt, what do you got?
Well, I actually do have Gandhi.
Nice.
You know, and it's like you said, maybe it's an easy, obvious choice. But the thing is, when I mean, okay, Ashton Kutcher can play Steve Jobs, who's a person maybe who changed the world, but Gandhi, you know, he really changed the world. I mean, he will be a figure that people look at and remember and learn from for generations to come. And Ben Kingsley played him with all the dignity and respect that that character or person really deserved. And he pulled it off very well, and it could have really sucked.
Oh, totally.
Sure.
And I think he did it well. It's one of my favorite movies, actually. So
nice. Yeah. Now, we threw this out onto Twitter to the Jawheads right before we got started. Did we get any responses?
As ever, yeah. Let's see. Allison Jones, who is AJones_SD on Twitter, said, "That's a loaded question. Based on accolades, Gandhi or Schindler's List?" Another great one there. "Based on stopping every time I see it, Dave. It still makes me smile." Every time she sees it on TV.
I forget that he's even in
TV. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, me too, actually. Okay, Rodney Stone, who's at JerOB on Twitter, said, "Lots will go with Gandhi." I guess it was an obvious choice. "Sexy Beast, House of S&F."
Sexy Beast is great, too.
It is, yeah.
"And Schindler's List, but give me Bugsy." Very underrated movie.
Bugsy?
Yeah,
wow.
Bugsy.
Yeah, I'll give you underrated because... it's definitely not overrated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The guy can do just about anything. I mean, you know, go ahead. I was going to mention one other one, but go ahead and if you want
to
read some.
Yeah, maybe they get to it. Let's see. At Anchorless757 said Gandhi, hands down. At Ellie1981, Sexy Beast. Mm-hmm. Although, admittedly, I don't think I've seen any of his earlier movies.
Hey, Sexy Beast is a good call on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And then last but not least, Fuzzy Lan, who is at Fuzzy Land on Twitter, said Thunderbirds.
Can't say I've seen Thunderbirds.
Yeah, boy. Very obscure.
Yes.
Very obscure.
Wow. Nice pick, Jawheads. I like when they go obscure. You had one more, David?
I was just going to say, I mean, I know this is kind of a silly choice, but he was absolutely the best thing in Iron Man 3. I mean, come on.
He was.
I mean, he was the best.
What was his name again?
The Mandarin.
The Mandarin,
The Mandarin, yes.
But he had a real name because he was...
Trevor Slattery.
Yeah, that's right.
It was his real name, yes. But yeah, I mean, you know, I liked that movie, but I enjoyed his performance so much in that movie because he just really played both of those sort of dual characters that he was playing very well.
He did. I mean, here's the Marvel fanboy coming out real quick.
I know.
I was so disappointed with their treatment of the character, the Mandarin.
Yeah.
But I have to admit that Ben Kingsley in that movie was an absolute treat beginning to end. Like,
totally.
Every second he's on the screen, it's riveting.
Yeah. Yep.
So
nice. He's great.
Probably the best part of that film.
Yep. Jawheads, if we missed one of your favorite Ben Kingsley movies, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. Speaking of new movies, Matt, I got out and caught 12 Years a Slave.
Solomon Northup is an expert player on the violin.
I was born a free man, lived with my family in New York.
Be good for your mother.
Until the day I was deceived.
To Solomon.
Kidnapped, sold into slavery.
Well, boy, how you feel now?
My name is Solomon Northup. I'm a free man.
And you have no right whatsoever to detain me.
You're no free man. You're nothing but a Georgia runaway.
If we had to limit this review, Matt, to one word, it would be powerful. Director Steve McQueen has given us the most impactful look at slavery we have ever seen on the silver screen. The film tells the true story of Solomon Northup, a free black man from upstate New York who is abducted and sold into slavery. He, along with others, are secretly transported to the South and sold to a plantation owner. From there, we witness the horrible and gruesome life of a slave. We have heard and seen the cotton fields before, but not like this. This time, it is so much more vivid. We meet the plantation owners, some worse than others. We meet the person who sells the slaves like they are cattle. This disgusting role is played perfectly by Paul Giamatti, and I almost feel dirty applauding his performance. Same can be said for Michael Fassbender's performance as one of the worst plantation owners we have ever met. He takes such command of the screen. We hate him, but can't help but be drawn in by his presence. Paul Dano, Matt, also plays a disgusting character, and while he has a smaller role, he is as effective as the others. However, I saved the best performance for last, and that would be of Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Close. I think it's Chiwetel Ejiofor.
There we go.
Ejiofor. Very close.
Yes, there we go.
It's not an easy one.
No.
He brings such compassion to Solomon Northup. His quest to get home to his family in New York seems dark at times, but we can always see the hope in his eyes. He's a shoo-in for an Oscar nomination, and in my opinion, will probably walk away with the statue. As predicted, Steve McQueen has delivered a movie of stunning glory. The film is shot beautifully, and the score can bring you to tears on its own. There is one shot in particular that I want to highlight here, and that is of our lead, Solomon, who is being hung from a tree branch. The actual hanging is interrupted, and they leave him there, with a noose still around his neck, with his toes barely touching the ground, keeping him from choking. No one coming to help him. McQueen stays on this image for what seems to be an eternity. It's extremely effective. I felt a whirlwind of emotions during it. Discomfort, sadness, hatred, and mainly pain. This is a painful movie. This is an important movie. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 3¾ Jaws, one of the year's best.
Oh.
Well, I just have to ask, and forgive me for this, but after your 4-jaw review of Gravity, what held back that quarter jaw
jaw? You know what was funny? On two shows ago, we actually had the Rot Shop guys on, and Dorian had caught a screening of this when the film wasn't quite finished, and Steve McQueen was in Chicago here. And they had asked him about the ending, and there was definitely, as he had said here on CinemaJaw, they were concerned how it ended, how you felt about the ending. Two things that kept it from a full 4 stars. One, the middle part, and as I say this, I think that it was intentional anyways. They go back to the fields a couple of times, and I think it's important, but at the same time, it's sort of like, oh, geez, here they go.
A little repetitive?
Repetitive, but at the same time, it gets you thinking, that was the life of the slave. I mean, how painful this was, you know, counting how much cotton, you know, per poundage they picked a day and right back out to the field and such. And then secondly, the ending of the film, it's a wonderful story, but sometimes stories don't lend themselves to that perfect Hollywood ending. It doesn't end when they stick it like a gymnastic 10. Mm. And so it sort of ends a bit abruptly for me. Powerful still. I don't think there's going to be a dry eye in the theater, but just a little clunky at the end is the best way I can describe the ending of the film.
Hmm. Now I'm super intrigued.
I know. I'll definitely be seeing that. I mean, I've heard great things about it, and your review kind of seals it too. So
yeah, yeah. And Brad Pitt's also in here. He has a small role. Paul Dano's a small role. Giamatti's small roles. But they're not in that small role. Did you see the butler?
Yeah.
Now here was, for me anyways, the small roles of all these big names playing the president almost took me out of the film. Here's a case where that didn't happen at all. Each one of them comes on, I mean, and one's more disgusting than the other sometimes, and they all do such an excellent job. But,
oh, wow. Can't wait to see this.
Yeah, just a powerful film, you know. Painful, too. So that was my 3¾ Jaws for 12 Years a Slave. Jaw heads, get out and see it. It's going to be opening wide as the weeks go on. There were no kick-ass kids in this movie, but Ender's Game is coming out in theaters, and that is our topic this week, Matt, and you're getting us started.
All right. As I like to do, I'm coming out firing, and I think everyone was waiting to see at what point this person would appear on my list, so I'm just going to get it out of the way early. Hit Girl at number 5.
Had to be on your list.
It had to be on my list. I'm really excited to see what Chloe Moretz puts on the screen for Carrie, and I've been hearing good things.
Oh, I've heard awful things.
Really? I've actually been hearing some good things.
It's very split.
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet, but it's very, very split. I mean, I've heard some good things. I've heard some awful things, so it'll be interesting.
Well, I'm going this weekend. Next episode, I'll have my review. But as Hit Girl, she was absolutely kick-ass. She takes a 357 slug to the chest from her dad just in training. And then she comes into the battle with the knives and swords, and she's chopping people up like it's nothing. I mean, she's absolutely relentless. I wouldn't want to go toe-to-toe with her. Kick-ass kid. I mean, she's in the movie called Kick-Ass.
Yes.
There you go.
Nice pick. Nice pick, Matt. Right. We swing it over to David's number 5. What do you got sitting there?
I am going to go with, let's go with Bobby J. Thompson. I don't know if you guys remember him, but from a movie called Role Models. Do you guys remember that? Remember that movie?
This is a great movie, actually.
Paul Rudd, Sean William Scott. So Bobby J. Thompson is the little kid that one of them has to basically be the big brother to. They get in some trouble. They have to do this like mentoring program, and Bobby J. Thompson is one of the kids they have to mentor. And just the most foul-mouthed, like little 8-year-old you've ever met, just, you know, cussing them out, you know, top to bottom of the movie, and but it's hysterical. I mean, the kid is really, really funny. Definitely a kick-ass kid.
Nice.
I love
pick.
It when kids swear. And, yeah. That's one of my favorite things.
I know, right?
And Role Models is so underrated if you haven't
it
seen it. It's not my kind of movie. I remember renting it. I usually don't like those kind of like ridiculous comedies, but oh, did I love that one.
Yeah, no.
Had fun with it.
Really funny.
Nice pick. At number five, I have the character's name was Joe Lamb, sort of from a new classic here of family films. He starred, his character was in the 2011 film Super 8, played by Joel Courtney. And he's the...
That's a good pick, dude.
Yeah, he's the kid that goes back to get Elle Fanning, and when she's been captured by the alien, they go into the cave. You know, I've seen it a couple of times now, and I really enjoy it because we don't get that kind of adventure film like The Goonies, and that may come up on somebody's list later down the line. It seems like it's just sort of disappeared. Maybe it's because I've gotten older and I don't go check out those kids' movies as much.
Sure. No, but you're right. It
Super 8 was just, it hit the right tone of that nostalgia of the late 70s, early 80s time, you know?
Very good pick.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, guys.
I didn't expect to see that. That's a good one.
Nice. That was my number five. We're into our fours. What do you got sitting there, Matt?
If you don't have this dude on your list, it's a big mistake, Indy. Short Round.
The real best, nice pick.
The best sidekick of all time. You can keep your Robin, you can keep your Bucky. Give me Short Round, okay? He's right there underneath the awning when you fall out of the second story window with the car. He's ready to go. No time for love, Dr.
He's
Jones.
He's driving with those blocks on his shoes. Oh, I love him.
Short Round was unbelievable. And as a kid, I think he made Indiana Jones just a little bit more relatable for me.
Sure.
You know, so it sort of pulled me into the story a little bit more with having Indy with a little kid.
Right, right.
So I loved Short Round.
Yeah,
with
me
too. With his New York Yankees cap and everything.
Nice.
He's such a great character.
Nice pick. Nice pick.
And he's a Goonie alum.
Yep.
So.
He is a Goonie alum. In fact, his name is Jonathan Kwan, and he went right from Indiana Jones to the Goonies. That's who I picked. This Data. From Goonies.
Is that your number four?
That was my number four, yeah, actually.
This works out perfectly.
I loved him too, and I was looking, I was like, oh my God, he was Short Round as well, that's right. And Goonies was a movie for me. I mean, I was like 10 years old, I think, when that came out.
Yeah.
And that was one of my just favorite movies from growing up. And, I loved him in the movie. He was one of those kids that he always had a little gadget going, and they almost never worked, but it was still fun watching him on
booby
screen.
Booby traps.
Booby traps, that's right, exactly. Booby traps.
Yeah. When his inventions worked, they saved his life.
Exactly.
You know, the pinchers of power, you know?
That's right, exactly. So, yeah, that's another one. We're on the same wavelength, I think. So.
Nice picks at number four. I follow it up with... a 1987 film. It starred Christian Bale, directed by Steven Spielberg. In there, Christian Bale played the young kid Jim Graham. I am speaking of Empire of the Sun.
Mm. Oh, sure, yeah.
Very good.
Yes, I mean, this is, for people who aren't familiar, Christian Bale was this kid actor at the time, and what a performance he puts on in Empire of the Sun.
Yeah.
Of course, it ends with one of the best scenes. My girlfriend's dad loves this movie because he's very big in airplanes, and the P-51 bomber comes in, and of course, Jim in the movie is obsessed with planes. He wants to be a pilot, and here come the Americans finally to save him. Because he is in Shanghai under the Japanese control, separated from his parents. And I picked him because he's just has this knack of survival. He's in the camps. But for a while, he was back at his house with nobody. And it's such a great story. And finally, the Americans come, and he yells, P-51, Cadillac of the Sky. Oh, I love it. Christian Bale, way back then he was acting...
He was also in Newsies.
Yeah, that's right. He was
early...
in the musical Newsies. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
That was my pick, Empire of the Sun, Jawheads. If you haven't seen it, it's a must. We're into our threes.
All right. So speaking of survival, I think this is a kid that typifies survival absolutely to its core. Rebecca Jordan, who you will know better by her nickname, Newt, in the film Aliens, who's played by Carrie Henn, which I'm almost positive this was her only role. In fact, I am positive. I looked it up on IMDb. This was her only role. And what a role. I mean, Newt was really the emotional core of the entire movie, Aliens, and it's one of my absolute favorites. We can debate for hours which is better, Alien or Aliens. It kind of depends on my mood. Mm. Such a great action movie, and that kid survived, the Xenomorphs all by herself, just hiding in the ductwork of the... You got
the
a
ship,
feel
yeah.
for her, like how terrified
Absolutely.
She must have been as a character. It was a great, great character.
Excellent.
Nice pick, nice pick. What do you got sitting there, David?
Newt.
Well, in terms of, you know, we're talking survival, as you talked about with Newt there. This is kind of, this might one might be a little off the beaten path a little bit, but a young actress named Sarah Bolger, she was in a movie called In America in 2002. In America, one of my favorite movies of the 2000s, I think. And she, you know, it was she and her real life sister actually played sisters in the movie.
That's right.
And, you know, it was really about the survival of this family, like in Hell's Kitchen. And this girl was sort of the emotional core of the family, had to see a lot of awful things happen around her family at that time in the movie. And some really great performances otherwise. Obviously, Jaimin Hansu, he got an Oscar nomination that year for that movie. But it's a movie I've found that not a lot of people have actually seen, and I love to recommend that one to people as often as I can, because that's just one that really gets me every single time.
Yeah, it's proudly in my DVD collection. I've seen it a few times, and it's so excellent in the end. It's one of those movies, it can really, you know, get a lump in your
Absolutely.
Throat. Every time I see it, it's like, oh. And I also, on a funny side of that movie, I love the scene where he's trying to get the air conditioner.
Yeah.
It's great.
Exactly.
It's all hot in New York. He's carrying that
totally.
Big air conditioner. Great, great movie, Jawheads. If you haven't seen it, In America, that's an awesome pick right there. Swings us over to my number three, and here's a character who is kick-ass and in all ways, Matt. And we actually had the actor on our show. I am speaking of Atreyu from The NeverEnding Story.
Oh, very good.
Noah Hathaway.
Yes, played by Noah Hathaway, who we had on the show at C2E2. And I actually wanted to play a quick clip of, we had asked him because it was actually directed by Wolfgang Petersen. A German,
partially, yeah.
Yeah, German director, and the whole cast, I guess, was German, and we asked him about that. Real clip.
You know, one of the things a lot of people probably don't know about that film, it was a German film, right? I mean,
yeah, we shot a year in Munich, and the original writer was a German writer called Michael Ende, and they adapted it to an American screenplay, and the director was German. The first director was German. They fired him. The second director was German. And it just, you know, I guess the stars might have aligned and it happened the way it was supposed to happen, you know?
He was an interesting guy, wasn't he, Matt?
Oh, man, it was a real treat to have him on. He was really cool.
Yeah.
He was Atreyu.
It was, I know. It was like, oh, my God, we're sitting right next to Atreyu. And he's also in Sushi Girl. It's a new movie with Mark Hamill. It's streaming on Netflix. Check it out, Jawheads. That was my number three, Atreyu from The NeverEnding Story.
All right, so getting into our number twos, this is where I start to go super iconic. And they may be pedestrian, I don't know, but these are the ones that are super important. Kids that I kind of built my entire identity around. And at number two, I have Kelly Leak from the Bad News Bears.
Yeah.
This is Jackie Earle Haley.
Yes.
Before he was Freddy Krueger, before he was Rorschach, he was Kelly, who comes in onto the Bad News Bears. He's riding a motorcycle.
That's right.
You know, smoking cigarettes. And you know, my I guess I must have been like 5 or 6 when that movie came, maybe even younger. But my young self, just seeing that, thought he was the, you know, the absolute embodiment of cool. Obviously.
That explains,
you know,
a lot.
It does,
Matt.
Right? It does.
There you go.
The leather jacket and everything like that. I mean, I so liked his character. I'm like, that dude is cool. He had a foul mouth. He spat. He swore. I loved him.
Oh, that's awesome.
He was a badass kid.
He really was. Man. Totally.
Listen, you got to be bad when even the Bad News Bears
think
you're bad.
They think you're bad. That's right.
Nice pick. Nice pick, Matt. David, what do you got sitting at number two?
I am going to go with Abigail Breslin from Little Miss Sunshine. I know she's not necessarily kick-ass, but that scene at the end of that movie when she they're at the pageant, and she breaks out into that dance that she and her grandpa had put together. I mean, I lost it then, and forever she will always be that little girl in that movie to me, I think, because I loved her in that movie so much. And the movie's, you know, I think probably pretty challenging for a kid, because obviously she's working with a lot of really good actors and some adult actors, of course, but you know, the movie's pretty deep in a lot of ways. I mean, it deals with depression. It deals with a lot of different things that are going on with these folks. And she really pulled it off. And it's that scene at the end at the pageant where she dances that just won me over completely.
For sure. And she dances with such confidence, even when everybody in the room is just like, what is this?
Totally.
It just doesn't matter to her. You know what
Absolutely,
I mean?
Absolutely,
love it. Nice pick at number two. At number two, I can't believe this name hasn't been mentioned. If I'm stealing your number one, Matt, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But
we'll find out.
I mean, how can't this kid be on your list? 1991, played by Edward Furlong in Terminator 2. I'm speaking of John Connor.
Yes.
Not my number one.
Wow, I thought this would be a number one for you. Of course, he's...
It's an honorable for
me. He's really big on driving his little motorcycle, and he goes around stealing the money from the cash machine.
He hacks into an ATM. I mean, that's
pretty badass.
Yeah. Right.
And of course, the whole chase, everything with the Terminator. Terminator 2 overall is just a badass movie.
Yeah.
And obviously, I love the connection. It's probably the best as far as emotionally connecting with you, the boy with the father-like...
The robot, right?
Yeah, right.
Father-like figure
surrogate father,
ends up being. I love that whole connection of it all. And when it ends, I remember seeing it. I mean, I was probably only 15 at the time. I had like a tear in my eye when I saw the end of Terminator 2.
Why you cry.
That's right.
But it is something I could never do.
I love it. That was my number two, John Connor, played by Edward Furlong. We are into our ones, Matt, and we have not crossed over.
All right, let's get serious here, okay? You're talking about kick-ass kids. I think the one kid who had the most balls in the absolute best movie about kids is Gordy LaChance in Stand By Me.
Mm.
Gordy is the kid who summons up the courage. It's not the River Phoenix character. It's Gordy, kind of the nerdy, wimpy one, who pulls the gun on Ace and holds him there. And Ace says, "Are you going to shoot us all, kid?" And he's like, "No, Ace. Just you, you know." I mean, and with the confidence, and it's Will Wheaton too. You know, it's not a very intimidating presence on screen, but somehow he pulled that off, and you believed in that moment he would have pulled the trigger. And Gordy, I loved him. I mean, who didn't love Gordy in Stand By Me?
Yeah, so. I mean, I love everybody in Stand By Me.
Oh,
it's a wonderful movie. You're right. Yeah, great pick. That's a worthy number one. And I should warn you, David, many times Matt drops the ball on his number one.
Is that right?
Yes, a lot of times.
Yeah, he gives me crap about a Tom Hanks pick like 10 episodes ago.
Oh, no.
And then he pulled a Betty White a couple ago. That
was not number one.
That was a number one. Go back and listen.
What was the topic? I don't even remember.
It was funniest actresses in movies. And he throws out Betty White. I could have killed the guy. All right. That was a worthy number one.
Betty White.
All right. Tough crowd, guys. All right. David, you're number one.
Okay, so my number one, I had to go. She's a great actress. She's still a great actress. Natalie Portman in Leon the Professional.
Oh, nice.
1994.
Badass.
Jean Reno. I mean, she was just so badass.
Matilda.
In that movie. Yeah, exactly. She was so great in that movie. And that's one that I still will go back and I'll see it. You know, it'll be on cable or something. And I really will. You can't take your eyes off of her when she's on, you know, when she's on screen. She is so good at whatever age she was. I mean, she couldn't have been more than 12 at that point.
Maybe 13.
Maybe, yeah. And she was just so beyond her years as an actress. And so good because she's, you know, she's working against this French actor who is, you know, esteemed there. And none of us knew who he was, but certainly he was a formidable actor. And she went head-to-head with him for that entire movie and was just so good. And you saw in her then, I think, what she has become, which is an excellent actor to this day, so...
Nice pick. And I actually went with the same theme for my number one as well. Another absolute badass, another assassin, another female. I hope jawheads have caught this one. It is the character named Hannah in the movie Hannah.
Oh, I love that movie.
See, now here we go. Really, this is a number one?
Yes, it is a number one. If you've seen it,
I love that movie, actually. I really like that movie a lot. And
talk about a kick-ass
character.
Too fresh. No. Oh, I'm not. I mean, it's played by, I guess she calls her name Sorcy.
I always heard it was Saoirse Ronan.
16-year-old girl who's been trained to be an assassin her entire life by Eric Bana. They're out in like the winter woods of Finland out there, and she makes a trek across Europe on an assignment to kill Cate Blanchett, and boy, all hell breaks loose. The film's pretty violent, and I'm telling you, as a thriller, if you haven't seen it, you haven't seen it, Matt, and you're giving me grief.
I've not seen Hannah, that's true.
You can't give someone grief when you haven't seen the movie.
That's all right. Fair. Fine. Yes. Fine.
Done. I'm telling you, Hannah is right up there with
I totally agree
Leon
with
the
you.
Professional.
Very good.
Yeah. That was my number one was Hannah. I only had one honorable that wasn't mentioned here, and that was Claudia in Interview with the Vampire.
Mm. Sure, yeah. Kirsten
Played
Dunst.
By yeah. Kirsten Dunst.
Very good.
That was my honorable. Any others before we go to break?
Yeah, I have a couple. Let's see. The Goonies. We got to just give props to the whole
All
group.
Of them.
The Explorers. River Phoenix. Man, brain fart. Can't remember the other.
Throw it in the jawbox.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Natty Gann. Remember the Adventures of Natty Gann? John Cusack is in that. Mm.
All right, we're running long here.
Kevin McAllister, the Monster Squad.
Yes, Kevin McAllister.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ralphie, of course. And last but not least, a big fan of Carol Ann. Kick-ass, kind of creepy. I liked her. She wasn't afraid of ghosts.
Nice, nice. Jawheads, if we missed a kick-ass kid and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have a cinema war looking at Anchorman 2, plus David Plummer versus Matt in game movie trivia. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. Concerning the film The Outsiders, in the scene where the young girl at the Dairy Queen asks Dallas for 15 cents, the young girl is played by Sofia Coppola, daughter of director Francis Ford Coppola. She is credited in the film under the stage name Domino. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with David Plummer, producer and contributor over at Windy City Live. Matt, we threw a few items into the Jaw box, and due to scheduling, Elias could not be here. We were in a pinch.
Yeah.
So we had to go outside of our normal realm. Reno couldn't even make it.
I know.
So we got the help.
We threw the CinemaJaw signal up into the sky, and all the podcast producers in Chicago were scrambling, and the first one through the door was the absolute superhero, Pat O'Rourke from Peaches and Hot Sauce.
Pat, get out of that jaw box.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! Oh, what's in the box?
Oh, man. You guys really got to clean that thing.
Well, it's Elias.
Oh, it's disgusting in there. And did you see how many doilies he keeps in there? I don't know what he's doing, but...
he's got to do something.
Yeah, well, I guess that's how he spends his time.
How
doilies.
Bad does it smell in there?
Oh, it smells.
Yes.
Oh, it smells something like the bottom of a rat's butt. You know?
there's some scorpions, so be careful. Ooh. That's what we feed him.
Now we
feel
yeah, yes.
We do feed him. Now we threw one item in the jaw box.
Right.
It was the Explorers. Who was in the Explorers?
It was Rivers Phoenix and Ethan Hawke.
Ethan Hawke was who we were looking for, right?
Yeah.
You couldn't
great,
think of that.
Great underrated movie, although some of the special effects don't hold up. I love The Explorers.
Yeah. Now, really quick, Pat, you actually host a podcast network. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I'm the executive producer for, I don't know what to call myself, for peachesandhotsauce.com. We're a network of comedy podcasts based out of Chicago. I do a show on that network called Making New Friends. New episodes come out every Thursday, so check it out. It's kind of an absurdist web series podcast where we're in a kitchen that anything can happen. So, yeah, give it a listen.
Best place to check it out online?
PeachesandHotSauce.com.
Wonderful.
Thank you for coming to our rescue, sir.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Yes. So he is filling in for Elias, and he will come in big time when you guys need a trivia. You'll get one clue in the trivia called Pick Me Up, Pat.
Nice. I love it. Perfect.
Yes. Matt, it brings us to a segment called
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week. And our guest this week, David Plummer, gets to play judge and jury and tell the Jawheads who he thinks won this Cinema War. We see Ron Burgundy already out making ads. We know Anchorman 2 is coming. Matt, you think he's just doing this maybe for the money? I don't know what. I think we got another smash on our hands. Heck, Pat, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic is Anchorman 2 a great idea or a sign that Will Ferrell's well is drying up? Rye, you will be fighting It's a Great Idea. Matt, you'll be fighting His Well is Drying Up. Let the Cinema War begin.
Drying the well? No chance. If Will Ferrell was making a sequel to Blades of Glory, I would say you have a point, but this is Anchorman, a movie fans have wanted a sequel to for years.
Right, Will Ferrell's well is running dry, and this lame-ass sequel just proves it. I'm not saying the guy isn't funny anymore, but he's not old-school funny.
Ooh, proving that this film is for the fans, Matt, the entire cast is back. this is not Will Ferrell trying to cash in on some easy dollars. From Christina Applegate to Steve Carell to Vince Vaughn, they're all back, and some new faces such as Harrison Ford and Sacha Baron Cohen will be popping up. Let's see this thing, San Diego.
Oh, man, I don't know. Just like Adam Sandler, the charm has just worn off. Dick and fart jokes are funny for a while, but Will is just not complex enough to have that comedic staying power of, say, a Richard Pryor.
Ooh, come on, Matthew. Will Ferrell has three films currently in production besides Anchorman 2 and showing no signs of slowing down. Giving us another Ron Burgundy film to celebrate is not showing signs the well is drying. It's showing signs that the man is listening to the fans. I think we want this movie more than he does.
Oh, he's got all these really cheap tie-ins. I saw a Ben and Jerry's ice cream flavor, Scotch, Scotch, Scotch. I mean, it's kind of...
That's funny.
Yeah, whatever, man. It's a cash-in. The campaign, the internship, and now Anchorman 2. His last few movies have sucked, and I'm just not amused anymore. I think he should try to develop some more dramatic roles, like his turn in Stranger Than Fiction. That could be where his future success lies.
Well, Matt, if you look at Will Ferrell's filmography, there's actually very, very few films I would want a sequel to. And you know, I'm always fighting for originality in Hollywood, but sometimes you can't pass on a sure thing. Now, people like Carell and Paul Rudd, who had small roles in the first, will add even more laughs this time around. Think of it this way, Matt. Ron Burgundy is too big of a legend to have just one film.
Ben and Jerry got to you, didn't they, Ry? Tom Hanks, Michael Keaton. These are guys who started off in comedic roles, but knew when to get serious as their initial jokes started to wear thin. When they returned to comedic roles, then it felt refreshing and not stale. Pull that tranquilizer dart out of your neck, Rye, because it's been stuck there since 2003.
Ooh, come on, Matt. Stay classy. We are buttonheads, as always, on Cinema War. We throw to our guest, David Plummer of Windy City Live. What'd you think of this Cinema War?
I think you both made some excellent points. You know, I think that where I stand, I think I would have to probably agree with Ryan more, only because I think that this sequel was inevitable. I think it had to happen. I think that when this movie first came out, when Anchorman first came out, it was not a big box office hit. These guys were not stars at the time, other than Will Ferrell and some of the other side characters that ended up showing up in the anchor fight.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do think they had to do this, and I don't really mind the tie-ins for a movie like this because I think it's sort of built for that. You know, I think Scotch, Scotch, Scotch as a—that's funny. That is funny as a flavor for Ben and Jerry's ice cream, and I hope to God it's good. Like I really do, because I love Anchorman, and you know, I can quote the movie, and I love it, and I'm gonna be the most disappointed person if it's terrible. But I got to go with Ryan on this one.
Wonderful. Fair wonderful. Enough. Thank
right,
you.
Good for you, Ryan.
Yes, that earns me 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever I want. And Matt, I wanted to guide this rant towards the DVD special features that have disappeared now when you rent a movie. I can't stand it anymore. I got the point why the studios did it. They wanted us to buy the DVDs. But now we're to the point where we're either going to stream the movie or rent the movie. At least put the special features on for me to rent. Entice me to rent the movie. Now I rent a film. I'm all interested in a couple of things in Oblivion. I go to hit the special features and they're not available. Come on, guys.
I'm with you on that one, dude.
I would agree.
Well, good use of your rant.
Thank you. Matt, Ender's Game is opening up, and in honor of Ender's Game, we are playing game movie trivia.
Finally, a topic I know something about.
Yeah, well, we'll see if you know anything about anything.
I've been sitting around in my underwear playing GTA 5 for the last month. Unapologetically.
Great.
Too much information.
Yeah, sorry for that visual.
Trivia works like this. David, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals if you don't know it, and if you get stuck on one, our engineer this week, Pat, has clues to all the question. You get one. Pick me up, Pat.
Okay. I am going to defer and let him go first.
All right.
Question number one over to Matt K. Spike Lee directed Denzel Washington and basketball player Ray Allen in this 1998 basketball movie.
I have no idea. She's got game? I got nothing. Got game? Am I close? Am I in the ballpark?
Throw it over to Pat on this one. What do you think?
He's so close.
I know.
He's got game.
We'll give it to him. All it right. was He Got Game. Yeah, boy, yeah. oh boy. I didn't know what to do wow. there, Matt. Boy, oh boy.
Wow,
why would you say
a...
She Got Game?
I don't know. I thought that's what it was, but obviously
was
it was
asinine.
He
that
got
was it. Absolutely asinine.
You watch funny. A lot of WNBA?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, great one. All right. 1-0, Matt K. Question number 2 over to David. In the movie The Hunger Games, which actor plays the evil President Snow?
That is Donald Sutherland. Yes.
1-1. We got a ball game here. We got a ball game. Matt, question number 3. Keyword there, ball game. All right. Question number 3. In 1997's The Game, Michael Douglas gets a present from his younger brother, played by what actor?
Martin Sheen?
Can I steal this if
you,
I...
You can steal you can, it now, yeah. David. You got to steal.
Sean Penn? Yes.
2-1, David. 2-1, David. And question number 4 is over to him. David, name the 2000 film that starred Ben Affleck, Gary Sinise, Charlize Theron, in which Affleck is forced to help rob a casino.
Oh, my goodness. What is that movie? Reindeer Games.
Wow. Good one, dude.
I didn't know anybody who knew the film Reindeer Games.
I think Ben Affleck would have got that wrong.
I wrote that question as a stumper, but boy, you can't stump this guy. It is now 3-1, David. Question 5 is over to Matt. Gerard Butler and Michael C. Hall starred in this 2009 futuristic film in which Gerard Butler is under the mind control of a teenager.
That Michael C. Hall was... it was a Gamer.
Yes, Michael C. Hall was in there.
Really?
Jesus. You're thinking of Michael Anthony Hall.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Jeez.
Right. Okay.
I could just totally tell different. By the way you're saying that.
That's why you got to go by one name. Yeah. Come on. It's Mike right. Hall.
It is 3-2, Matt K. Question 6, now back over to David. In the 2012 HBO film Game Change, which actress starred as Sarah Palin?
Julianne Moore.
4-2, David. He brought his A game, Matt. Again, keyword game. All right, question number 7 over to Matt.
You're just going to keep beating that horse.
Yeah.
Huh? All right.
Sherlock Holmes plus its sequel, Sherlock Holmes Games of Shadows, were both directed by who? You do have a trip to the
Okay, fine. Pick me up, Pat.
Whoa, pick me up, Pat. Question number 7. Hmm. You got a clue there?
Ah, snatch. I got nothing.
Guy Ritchie. Very good clue, Pat. Thank
nice.
You. Thank
yeah,
you.
Exactly.
Well played there, Pat. Well played. Question number 8. It is now 4-2-3, but he can win it on a walk-off right here. Question number 8 over to David. The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, starred in this 2007 film in which he plays a football player who learns he has an 8-year-old daughter from a previous relationship.
Oh, man. I know the movie. I've seen it. A couple times, actually, because I have a daughter.
You do have a lifeline.
Oh, yes. Give me... pat me down, Pat. Oh, I'm sorry. What did pick me up, Pat.
Pick me up,
pick Pat. Me up, Pat. Yeah, yeah. Or pat me down. Either way.
Pat, question number 8.
I'll do both.
Okay.
Don't worry.
What was the name of that Dwayne Johnson movie?
Well, I'm giving him a hint, right?
Yeah, give him a hint. Give him a hint.
Strategy in Sports.
The Game Plan. Right?
Yes, he wins it on a walk-off.
Wow.
Well done, David.
Nice. Nicely
wins
done. Another game reference. Don't think I missed that one.
Well done. Well done. It is now 8-3. David wins this one. We did have a jawbreaker.
Gotta get a handshake
yeah,
in
get
here.
A handshake.
Very good.
Well, well done, guys. Yes, yes.
Good game.
We did have a jawbreaker, we call it, in case it came down to a tie. This would have been over to you, David. Better film, The Crying Game or Spy Game?
I would probably say Spy Game, actually.
It's actually The Crying Game.
Oh,
you would have missed that one.
Oh,
would have missed that
man.
One. The real jawbreaker was this. Age of Julianne Moore, closest to.
I'm going to say 43.
Pat, can you lock him in at 43?
I think she might be over 50. I would say Julianne Moore, yeah. I'll say 52.
Son of a bitch, she's 52 years old.
Wow, I am so wrong.
Wow.
Good job.
Yeah. Hey, she's...
That's a compliment.
It is.
She probably love me now. Yeah.
She's still good looking. Still good looking.
Should be noted, her birthday is actually December 3rd, so this podcast is going to be about a month ahead of that. Well, she'll actually be turning 53 at that point. So,
wow.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah. Boy, Matt, it brings us to the end of a great Cinema Jaw. First and foremost, we got to thank David Plummer. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.
It was a huge pleasure. Thanks, David.
A lot of fun.
It was. We're really looking forward to this one. And again, for the Jawheads who want to maybe see your movie reviews on Twitter.
Yeah, you go to at Plummer's Picks, or you can follow me personally at David Plummer.
And what time, roughly, on the show do you come on Windy City Live? For the real lazy Jawheads that don't want to watch all of Windy City Live, but want to see your picks come Tuesday?
It depends. It just depends on what we have on the show any certain day. Sometimes I'm early. Sometimes I'll be around like 11:45. So you just kind of really have to pay attention. So,
but Tuesdays.
Yeah. It's every Tuesday. Yeah, I'm on every single Tuesday. So.
Support Windy City Live. Support David Plummer, Jawheads. Thanks again for coming on. Yeah. Also got to thank our guest engineer, Pat O'Rourke. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, yeah, no problem. Anytime.
And again, the name of the podcast network?
Yeah, peachesandhotsauce.com. You can follow Peaches Hot Sauce on Twitter, or you can follow me at Pat Likes to Tweet.
Pat Likes to Tweet. He's That's got some funny hand. Tweets yeah. every once in a while.
He does.
Every once in a while.
I follow Pat on Twitter.
I do too.
Matt, we also got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to the New 400 Theaters.
Yes, there is no better theater in all of Chicago than the New 400, located in Rogers Park area of Chicago. Check out what's playing at the New 400. .com.
They got a bar.
Yes, they do. Full Ooh. Liquor bar. Best prices on first run movies. And also to Redbox Instant. Go to cinemajaw.com. Click on their site. Click on their ad on our site. And you get a free month of their service. And you help out Cinemajaw.
Yeah, like I said, win-win.
Until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.